In his new book, The Cause of All Nations, An International History of the American Civil War, historian Don Doyle reinterprets this quintessential American story as an epic global battle that would decide not only the future of slavery, but democracy itself. Don Doyle has lived in the South for over 40 years and has written extensively on its history and literature. He serves as McCausland Professor of History at the University of South Carolina and has spent several years teaching and researching in Europe and Latin America. Again, the title of the book is The Cause of All Nations, and we welcome Don Doyle to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm delighted as well. The idea of looking at the Civil War as an international history, what brought you down that path?
You know, I think it was when I was in Italy teaching as a Fulbright professor and was teaching the history of this war that was so familiar to us and seemed so unfamiliar to them. And one of them asked, well, why didn't the North just let the South go on its way? At this time, by the way, Italy was going through all kinds of conflict over the North and South division. And I later heard in that same year that the United States had issued an invitation to this Italian hero, Giuseppe Garibaldi, who, of course, is very famous in Italy, and offered to him a command of a Union army. And it was that story that kind of led me into this really fascinating world, first of diplomacy, but also of what we now call public diplomacy, the battle for the hearts and minds of European and Latin American observers from outside the United States.
How much, when the war was being waged, how much were we concerned about the international implications?
It was vitally important, and this is one thing I realized, that most of us within the United States looking at this as a North-South battle really do not appreciate what the governments on both sides of the Confederacy and the Union realized. And that was that whatever was happening on the battlefields, one of the most vital battlefields was overseas in the marbled courts of Europe. And the duel that was being fought there was over the question of recognition. The South wanted to be recognized as a nation, wanted its independence and sovereignty to be recognized by the great powers of Europe, Britain, France, Spain, or some combination thereof. And with that, they would be enabled to make treaties, to make alliances, to make trade compacts. And it would have meant independence, very likely, for the South. And so there was a battle. One historian back in the 1960s, Alan Nevin, said that this battle in the courts and in the public forum of public opinion in Europe was as important as Gettysburg or the Wilderness or any other battle. So it was very important to the outcome of the war.
Meanwhile, the international community certainly took notice of the American Civil War. They had a lot riding on it as well, very much in economic terms.
Yes. And, of course, the supply of cotton that was coming from the South and that was so important to the industrial economy of not just Britain, but also France, Belgium, even Italy and other parts of Europe were heavily dependent upon Southern cotton. And so all of the economic interests weighed in favor of the South and what the South called King Cotton diplomacy. And they were expecting, the Confederacy was expecting, that Europe would come to them and offer them recognition and would help smooth the way to independence very rapidly. And that did not happen.
You write that there were very prominent writers who were international writers writing in Europe that were saying, well, not only is this going to decide the fate of slavery and democracy in the United States, it is also going to do so in Europe and Latin America.
Yes. Apart from the economic interests, which were important, especially among for the government and for the business interests in Europe, the popular appeal had to do with this battle over the future of democracy. And it was conservatives, anti-democratic forces, who at first said, this is proof positive that the democratic experiment was failing and that this was the most spectacular collapse of many, that proved that people could not govern themselves without a king, without an established church, without some kind of dynastic power to unify the country, and that all republics, all self-governing societies, eventually would descend into anarchy or despotism. And now the Great Republic, as admirers called it, was falling into that same demise. And of course, for liberals, for Republicans with a small r, and those who believed in government by the people and had not achieved it in Europe, they began to embrace this idea of the American war as a kind of international struggle or part of a longer historic struggle for government by the people. And to the extent that they supported that, they rallied around the Union, not just as a adversary of slavery, but as a champion of this broader idea of equality and liberty and self-government.
You also make the point in the book that immigrant soldiers played a huge role in fighting the war for the Union, using a statistic saying that immigrants and the sons of immigrants made up 43% of the Union armed forces.
Yes, that was one of my big findings, and I don't think I've realized until I dove into some of the statistics on who these soldiers were, but it was remarkable. We've known for some time that about a quarter of the Union Army was foreign-born. Many of them had come over before the war. They were refugees from the failed revolutions and famines of the late 1840s, and they were already in place from Germany, from Ireland, from Britain, but also during the war, many of them came over, some of them for salaries, for inducements, as they called them, bounties of various kinds, but many of them because they were also looking for a way to support this Republican international ideal, and especially among the Germans who had come over since 1848, one of them by ancestors, by the way, Colonel and then General Frederick Solomon of Wisconsin. But they were very important to sustaining the war, and at a time when the draft was making the war unpopular in the North, the immigrant soldiers were an important source of replenishing the army. And I argue that without them, the Union could not have won.
Give us an idea of how the South tried to make its case for independence to the great powers in Europe.
You know, ironically, when the war began, the South was in a position of kind of making a liberal appeal. We are a people. We deserve to govern ourselves. We are like other aspirant nations in Europe and Latin America, and we deserve to be recognized. We're suffering at the hands of Northern tyranny and who are trying through the tariff and other means to extract wealth from us. And so they avoided the whole issue of slavery and actually made this kind of liberal appeal to the broader world. And of course, the Union had at first taken slavery off the table by guaranteeing slavery in the states where it existed and reassuring the world that this was not going to be an abolitionist war. And this was to, again, to win foreign support. Lincoln and Seward, his Secretary of State, thought that they needed to make reassurances to the governments who were dependent on cotton for their industrial economy. So they got into this peculiar position of the North making a kind of argument for national self-existence, self-preservation, and the South speaking the liberal language of national liberation. And the story that I tell in my book is how the Union, working with native authors and with Republicans overseas, Republicans, again, with a small r, those sympathetic with Republican ideals, began to turn the story into one of a contest between aristocracy and democracy, between slavery and freedom. And they did so partly with the Emancipation Proclamation and also by adopting this rhetoric of the war as a contest over democracy.
In looking at the outcome of the war, how immediate was the impact on the rest of the world?
It was quite striking. I think that one of the first impacts was that Europe, when the war opened, they were like vultures coming in to take advantage of this American debacle. And Spain swooped into Santo Domingo and reclaimed it as a colony. And France together with Britain and Spain, we often forget, invaded Mexico, toppled the Juarez Republican government, and established a European monarchy there under Maximilian. And that idea was to take over not only Mexico, but to establish a Latin Catholic empire that would spread throughout Spanish America and ally with Brazil. So the first thing that happened after the Union victory was the retreat of empire from the American hemisphere. Britain didn't withdraw from Canada, but they set up the Dominion of Canada, which was a self-governing quasi-nation, and essentially let Canada defend itself in the future. Russia sold Alaska in the same year, 1867, and withdrew from the Western Hemisphere. France declared that its mission in Mexico was finished and withdrew troops. Maximilian faced a firing squad in June 1867, and the echo from those shots in Mexico kind of signaled a somber warning to Europe that there would be no more colonization, no more experiments in monarchy in the Western Hemisphere. And at the same time, Spain was, after 4 years of fierce guerrilla warfare in the jungles of Santo Domingo, it was forced to withdraw from that experiment to retreat to Cuba. Cuba in 1868 ignited in a Republican revolution for independence. That revolution failed, but in the process, they freed their slaves. Brazil, the last bastion now of slavery, watched as the Union emerged, and Dom Pedro, the emperor of Brazil, wrote at the time, "I think in light of these Union successes, we had better reconsider our position on slavery." Mm. By 1871, they followed Cuba, not with abolition, but with what they called a free womb law, and that is that all children born to slave mothers from that point forward would be free. And so it was gradual emancipation. And so the last bastion of slavery ended, and both of those, Cuba and Brazil, had ended slavery completely by the 1880s. So it changed the world, and I think that not only with the death of slavery, but the Republican experiment got a new lease on life. And I think it in Mexico and in Cuba and other parts of Latin America, but also in Europe, this idea that people could govern themselves was back in favor. Britain passed the 1867 Reform Act that vastly expanded the right to vote. And if it wasn't a democracy, it was on its way toward a popular government that was based on widespread electoral representation.
You touch on this in the book, and I do find it fascinating because there are certainly these specific issues and what impact they have on not only this country, but the world at large. But as we look at it today, where we seem to worry a lot about global supremacy and that we are the top of the heap and so forth, that what was the image, what was the reaction that you have a nation, a still relatively young nation, that is fighting within?
Yes, it was at the beginning of the war, it was a crushing blow to the Republican ideal, and it really did worry the supporters of Democratic ideals that maybe this wasn't working. And a lot of British liberals, for example, began to think probably America does need some kind of monarchy, maybe a constitutional monarchy. But when they won, and when the Union proved that a democratic society actually could defend itself and could sustain 4 years of war and could mobilize 2 million men in an army and overcome this internal rebellion, it really heartened Republicans around the world and gave them courage. And I think that the democratic experiment was back on its feet. When Lincoln said that America was the last best hope of earth, he wasn't bragging. It was on the ropes, the whole idea that people could govern themselves. And this gave them new life, gave America new life, but also that Republican idea, new life around the world.
The name of the book is The Cause of All Nations, An International History of the American Civil War. The book is published by Basic Books. Don Doyle, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. I enjoyed it very much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is The Cause of All Nations by Don Doyle. It is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.